where he lived in Louisiana to where he now lives in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, building home. And there was my letter. But he didn't see it till he'd already given him the letter that was going to mail to me. And then he said, can I have my letter back? And the postman said, it's already been posted. And Frank was aghast, but it was a big laugh. He gave it back to him.
Mm.
But he mailed it anyway.
Mm.
He read my letter, and then my letter, which included the whole text of the birth and death of the miracle, a good share of which was left out of the newspaper. And he thought it was a beautiful epitaph.
Mm-hmm.
And that was nice. That was a compliment. But then he understood, you know, because that said it had died.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I wanted to say. I wanted to say it had died, because it had. It had sort of just aged to the point where it was becoming senile. That's one part, you know. That's the part of all the different directors' influences and mm-hmm. the loss of the impact and the mm-hmm. loss of the dramatic episodes and the changing of it from a drama into a pageant. And that way it had become senile. It had aged mm-hmm. and was ready to just totter off and be buried.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of it was that the community got to the point where they just took it for granted and said, those people are doing that, that's fine, let them mm-hmm. do that. And they quit coming, and they quit supporting it by their presence.
Mm-hmm.
We saw more and more people in the audience we didn't know,
mm-hmm.
And fewer people in the audience that we did know. Some continued to come and support it. It was always different.
Mm-hmm.
And the newspaper didn't even write a critique of the thing the last time we put it on. Did you notice that?
No, I didn't.
They wrote about this committee thing
mm-hmm.
and future plans, but no review of the play, if anyone went. And, you know, initially, Wayne Kotula, this should always be mentioned, Wayne Kotula and the Kodiak Mirror were one of the major reasons this survived.
Mm-hmm.
We got full-page ads on the back of the mirror for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
The man at one point was willing to put together a Kodiak color brochure, magazine brochure, with the ram as the background, or the cry of the wild ram, and the history as the background, and with all the other parts of Kodiak's tourist attractions, for a share of profits, 50-50 with Verona, Kodiak Verona. We never did that,
mm-hmm.
but he was willing to do that. A very generous guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, yeah, glad I remembered that, because he was very important.
Well, as I recall, when I got here, of course, Wayne was running the paper, and Lola was writing for him.
Mm-hmm, right.
Lola was doing reporting for him, so there was a lot of stuff from the time.
Yeah, we got good coverage then.
Yeah.
But you see, those people were involved,
mm-hmm.
and the involvement just sort of drifted away.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably a good share of our own fault.
Mm-hmm. You
know, for not letting people know we still needed them, we still needed the support to continue to do this. But you know, Bill, more and more people from out of town were seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go find that guest book, and I want to go back through that guest book, and I want to follow it over the years and see what's happened to the attendance from people out of town, and see if it's worth trying to regenerate the thing. But I'm getting a little concerned, because I've called Frank about a dozen times since the letter was written, that some of the board members approved with some degree of reticence, and I'm never connected.
Well, let's talk about that segment just for a second.
Yeah. What?
This epitaph you wrote for the death of the ram, and then the exchange of letters with Frank, and then his willingness to go ahead and to try to rewrite it.
Let me go back one thing. I left something hanging. Remember I told you how he reacted to the committee approach?
Mm-hmm.
His vitriolic letter was saying, no, it can't go on like this. There's no way this can happen. His next letter that accompanied this after he received my epitaph was an entirely different tenor. He said, why should I be doing this? Why should I be criticizing this effort? It's a community enterprise. It's yours now.
Mm-hmm.
I've given it to you. Do anything you want.
Mm-hmm.
It's a community enterprise. I don't have the right to, you know, criticized what he's saying. And he's really grateful to us for having done this.
Mm-hmm.
We've done it for 26 years, huh? Yeah. 26 years. Whoo, I can't believe that. But anyway, for 26 years we've done his play.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so pleased. He's so gratified. He's so grateful to us. And we, in turn, are so grateful to him. We wouldn't have had it if it weren't for him.
Mm-hmm.
We stopped paying his royalties again, you know, about 5 years ago. I don't know how long ago.
Mm-hmm.
He said when he gave it to us, he didn't want it anymore. I don't know. What, do you remember when that was?
That had to be in the early 70s there someplace.
Gave it completely about 5 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Saying you can rewrite, do anything you want now.
No, I don't.
Which we'd had probably done already.
Mm-hmm.
Most of. Okay, so after this, this nice letter that came and said, you know, you're doing this, it's a community enterprise, it's what it's supposed to be anyway. If it isn't as dramatic as I like it, that's all right, it doesn't matter. It's worth something. It's a creative effort on the part of the community. And that is its true value. Plus, it's a nice thing for people to come in and see. What a way to see history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, some of the people, you've probably heard it, some of the people who see it say, you know, that's the most significant thing that's happened to me in my whole trip in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
It's more meaningful to me. It gives me more understanding of what went on here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not everybody. One comment I got, by the way, did I tell you, from the lady that wrote? She says, Theater in the Rain, great concept. That was a lady who was a good sport. Okay, so he did say in the same letter that he would be willing to, in fact, he said when he was up here for the 25th anniversary with Joe, that he would do his, he had a rewrite in mind that was about 2 hours long, and cut a lot of the narration, and put some dramatic impact back into it. 2 hours long. Would be a much easier drama to stomach, especially if it's raining.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounded good, but you know, the guy always underestimates what he's going to do. I don't know how the devil he's going to write a 2-hour drama if he's going to even do it.
Mm-hmm.
He sounded enthusiastic, and as you heard in the letter, he said he'd have some time in February, but now it's April and I haven't been able to reach him yet.
Mm-hmm.
But what he had in mind was rewriting the play, cutting out a lot of the narration, if not all of it, and making it, cutting the numbers of characters down so it would be easier, male characters down, so it would be easier to produce, and probably reducing the number of dramatic episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And making it, what it's supposed to be is not really a continuous yarn with all the gaps filled, like we did with the narrator.
Mm-hmm.
We'd even fill in the gaps we didn't play with narration. Mm-hmm. So we give a continuous history. You don't need that. I think what he had in mind is a series of episodes that illustrated what happened without bothering to tie them all together in a linear fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And that way he wouldn't need the narrator. But I don't know where he is. Maybe he's dead. He recovered from Lyme disease, though.
Did he?
Every time he got something, he thought he was never going to get over it.
Homeless right now?
Gee, I don't know. When I was here, when he was here in the Navy, he had to be old enough to be in the Navy, probably in his 20s, and I was between 12 and 16, so he must have been maybe 10 years older than I. So he must be about 75 or 77.
Mm-hmm.
In his 70s, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's got the energy if he gets going. If he can light his fire.
Mm-hmm.
Continues to fan itself once it gets going.
Maybe he's just writing it and not going to say anything until he gets it done.
I don't know. I don't know if anybody lives at that number. I called information to verify the number I kept calling after a while and nobody answered. And Frank O'Brink, that's the right number.
Mm-hmm.
He's either on a long vacation or he takes very sound naps. So I don't know.
Well, with the history of the Ram, go ahead.
We ought to find somebody who's going back east and have him stop and ask a few questions around that town, the Ozarks, where he's building his house. Anyway.
That's in Arkansas, right?
Yeah.
I got some friends that live in the Missouri side up there.
Hmm. Yeah, we got the address. Got the phone number. That doesn't do any good.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be interesting if somebody could walk up there or drive up there or whatever you do to get up there. You said there are quite a few artistic people who are sort of retiring in this mm-hmm. in the mountains up there. And they do a lot of volunteer things up there. They're enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
He might be off directing a theater somewhere. He did that sure. for a while.
Sure.
But anyway, that's all I know. If Frank produces, I think we can bring it back to life again. Not this summer, by any means.
Yeah.
Maybe next summer. I'm not sure if Jerry wants to take on the headache again. It's mm-hmm. a big one.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't sound too discouraging when we talked about it, when we talked about a rewrite.
What,
I've got all the names of all the people if you want them. Well, I'd have to go through the minutes.
Yeah, but I was thinking, what would happen if 3, 4, 5 years from now somebody came along to, who holds it right now? Is that the Kodiak
Brana Productions?
Kodiak Brana Productions still holds it.
Which is the Arts Council, yes, we still own it.
And we if can, somebody came along in 5 or 6 years and said,
let's do this.
Let's do the original. Let's do it.
4 hours worth? No.
Whatever. It worked. It happened.
The first time we put it on here, Frank cut it.
Mm-hmm.
Cut it. It was 3.5 hours.
Yeah. Is there a possibility that?
Sure. I suppose there's a possibility as long as the city doesn't cut off the lease.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we can leave that site sit idle out there very long before somebody's going to get an idea about something they want to do with it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know? So 3 or 4 or 5 years from now, the whole complexion of the thing may have changed.
Sure.
And we might not have the opportunity to do that because we mm-hmm. might not have the site.
Mm-hmm.
Our 50 years is going to be up when? Well, not until 2013.
Which 50 years?
Our 50-year lease on the site.
Oh, I see.
Our 50-year management contract.
Is what I see. Yeah. Yeah.
But the management contract is contingent upon our producing something too. Mm-hmm. So they could turn
providing a recreational opportunity out there
or some kind of production. Mm-hmm. So we would abrogate our responsibility in the contract, and they could terminate it. So
mm-hmm.
that's an unknown 4 or 5 years down the way. I think if somebody comes up in the next year or two before somebody gets an idea for some other use of the site,
mm-hmm.
probably you better not print this. Somebody will start thinking about ideas,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Plant a seed and generate all kinds of unexpected things. So that's about it, eh?
Well, we've talked about the RAM a lot, and there's one other...
Something else you
want? One other thing I'd like to just touch on.
Okay.
And you have been and were from way back when very instrumental in getting Kodiak an auditorium here too.
Yeah, I was involved.
Well, I
so were a lot of other people though.
Yeah, but I when I say very instrumental, it kind of seemed as I recall you were kind of the spark plug running the engine again.
Yeah, I was the organizer and perpetrator of the campaign, but we got some help from John Witteveen when mm-hmm. we finally found we couldn't get a cultural center on our own. You remember that.
Mm-hmm.
The day that we joined forces was a good day. We decided we had to go with the school, and the school decided they wanted to go with a first-class auditorium, and so mm-hmm. between us, it worked.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you came. We had... I don't know how many people, but every time the subject came up at the Borough Assembly, we had lots of people from mm-hmm. the Arts Council there, and by George, they all spoke.
Mm-hmm.
And every time the Assembly wanted to have us list some of the things that were non-essentials that could be trimmed from the cost, nobody gave an inch. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to cut out this, they wanted to cut out that, like they always want to do, mm-hmm. just so they can feel like they have some, you know, effect, probably.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't cut out a thing, and the money happened to be available.
Mm-hmm.
So just going there, everybody came. There was, it couldn't have been done single-handedly by any means. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I did organize it.
But that goes back 10 years before we ever started with the auditorium, right? Talking about a convention center here. And
yeah.
I just remember conversations with you that went, you know, along those lines. Wouldn't it be nice if we could?
Yeah. We were looking for a convention center for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the Chamber of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
We had a committee. We never got very far. Then that Cultural Facilities Act passed, and we had a committee.
Mm-hmm.
And we hustled, and we got a design. We borrowed the one from Fairbanks,
mm-hmm.
remember?
Mm-hmm.
And we got a design and our estimates and our management system set up at the Chamber of Commerce when George Cruz was here.
Mm-hmm.
And we got up number one of 13 communities in the state, but they never funded it.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And a statewide election on whether they should fund the cultural facilities or not. Anchorage and Fairbanks defeated it. They had the money to buy their own.
Yeah.
But that died. That was when George Cruz who suggested we should hire Jerry
mm-hmm.
as manager of the Arts Council and combine the Cultural Facilities Committee and the Arts Council. And I remember a meeting we had up at school.
Mm-hmm.
I think you were there. We wrote down all the objectives that we wanted with this committee. Were you there?
I don't know. I've been to some.
But anyway, one of them was to hire a manager, one of them was to combine the committees. And that all happened, and we went before the city council, Jerry and I, and we got $30,000 to start it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we really started rolling, because Jerry started generating his own funds through
mm-hmm.
grants and so forth,
mm-hmm.
and he's made it work.
Mm-hmm.
And the auditorium was just a part of a spin-off. It came along with this. Jerry was a big part of that, too.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the 12-member committee representing the user organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the ones that went down in the Northwest and looked at state-of-the-art auditoriums in schools all over the
mm-hmm.
Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know whether we paid our way or not. The borough paid the way of three, and some other organizations paid the way of their own people. And the design that we have came out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fact that we had what we have is probably a good share of Jerry's input.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people that they chose to do the design.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how perfect it is.
Well, when you work with people that are, when you work with the performing arts series that comes around,
yeah,
get a lot of comments. This is one of the nicest facilities north of Seattle, or this is the nicest facility north of Seattle.
Yeah.
Well,
it's a dandy. I marvel every time I walk in there and look at that place. Or every time I take part in a play, or every time I see something.
Mm-hmm.
I hear the sound system has things that can be done with it that we haven't even figured out yet.
That's, yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah.
And will they work? The fellow from the Salvation Army, Cliff, or Craig.
Craig, yeah.
Seems to be interested in that
mm-hmm.
technology, and maybe he talks more than he knows, I don't know, but he said the designer came up. Did he?
We had.
And you guys got talking together.
Yeah.
Did he change anything?
He recommended some changes, but we went through. We had some speakers that were bad, and then he went. He went in the back. Now it wasn't the designer. This guy worked for the company that did the design. He knew the guy. He worked under the guy. But this is he was a technician that came up to just kind of fine-tune things. And yeah, he changed a few things around and rewired some systems just up in the stacks upstairs.
And did that make it more versatile and more easy to use?
It made it more easy to use.
Good, this is the first performance I've seen Mike as much as it was, by Brigadoon.
And I think, this is just, right, but I think Jerry's going to start doing that more. He was impressed with the fact that people were coming up to him and saying, you know, I could hear everything going on.
Yeah.
You
know, Meg's song, there's so many words,
mm-hmm.
and they have to be said so rapidly
mm-hmm.
that unless her diction is impeccable,
mm-hmm.
you don't hear it.
Right.
And even if you know what it says. But when she had her mic I didn't have to say it so loud, addiction proof, as it
mm-hmm.
does.
Mm-hmm.
And you could hear it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, so I think.
And there's more freedom. You don't have to always, you don't have to always speak out to the audience. You can speak to the person you're looking at. Mm-hmm. And I think it gives you a little more freedom.
Well, there's some techniques that have to be used. I know when Meg was down in...
You can't talk in somebody else's microphone.
Right, when Meg was right down in Jeff's face there, and he was, her microphone was about there, and he kept turning his head off to talk out here. It played well, but it was, I mean, if you talked at her, boy, it was...
It boomed through, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you should have been involved in that. You got involved. That's when you got involved in theater tech more.
I'm starting out.
With the auditorium?
Well, I know, out at the RAM.
Oh, did you?
Don Finner and I, the year that we were, I think I was president and he was vice president.
You guys were tech.
Oh, we were out there. I mean, he'd come by the house and pick me up and we'd go out to the RAM and we'd work for 2-3 hours a night and come back and have a cup of coffee and do it again the next night.
I remember when I was president, I used to rake all the big rocks out of the path and pick up the junk.
Yeah, that's the job of the president, I guess.
Oh, man, yeah.
But that was, that's where I really, that's the first time I got involved with, and then Carl Childs, you know, coming on.
Yeah, Carl's was in, Carl became another family member that got deeply involved in the thing. Gee, that was, well, he's been involved for, what, 15 years or so? Did he follow you?
Carl was involved when I was there. So in 70, Carl was involved.
Okay, so he's almost been there since the beginning. Yeah. He's still coming.
Yeah, I mean, you know, of course his mom was around, but.
Yeah, and that's interesting. His sister, the last director was his sister's husband.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sort of all in the family.
All in the family. Yeah.
Well, it's anybody's guess what's going to happen next. I think it depends on Frank. Or it depends on somebody else who can get enthusiastic, some other director who can get enthusiastic enough about it to be willing to go through the tremendous effort that it takes to do this.
Now, he put that on as a stage play?
Yeah.
In Anchorage?
It's a 100-foot stage in West Anchorage High Auditorium. We went over there, by the way, in costume to hear Toy on of Alaska, which was written for this bicentennial by Frank and some homosexual, well, Frank and some collaborating with a musician who wrote the music. So we went over there and watched this opera, about 20 of us. In costume. Didn't make a big splash, but we went over there anyway.
Had a good time.
Yeah. And there was this big buffoon playing Barana. Chubby fellow. Sort of waddled around the stage and sang operatically. And it just didn't seem to fit. But I do remember a scene from that. It was a scene from Unalaska to Kodiak in Umiak. And they were on stage in the Umiak, and the natives were paddling, and the music was building as they were approaching, and it was moving. And the music I stole for the Piesnia Baranova, and I could hardly wait for Frank to come back and see the play and hear the music. He didn't even recognize it. It was identical. Dum, bum, ba, bum, bum, ba, bum. Bum, ba, bum, they were wrong. Bum, bum, ba, bum, bum, you know? He didn't even recognize it. What a...
Well, we've had some, you know, another thing I just thought of is that, for the canonization of Father Herman, had some special productions that we did, just kind of for the, I don't know, it seemed like a Wednesday night or something, we did a...
All the priests were in town for the canonization. A lot of people were.
And so Metropolitan
we just dedicated a performance to them.
Mm-hmm.
Came and saw.
Yeah.
Right.
that
there was another Metropolitan before Theodosius, mm-hmm. was the young fellow.
And then there's a story too, and I've heard Lola tell this, and I can't pull it all together, but
we can interview her too.
Well, I thought about that. Gary said, cut off one limb at a time.
So you pick up different aspects from different mm-hmm. people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But she always told the story about the flood in Fairbanks, and did you dedicate
it? Yeah. Sure, we did a benefit performance, and sent the money from that the ticket sale money from that performance to Red Boucher, the mayor of Fairbanks, for flood relief. It wasn't much,
yeah,
but it was a nice idea.
Well, was it like in '67 when that flood? That height of flood in '67.
I don't remember. I just remember doing it.
But there was some. Was there something Fairbanks had done for Kodiak, or done for Kodiak Baranoff Productions, or had helped back in the early?
Yeah, they loaned us their, what do they call that place, the big round building up there at Fairbanks?
Alaska Land.
Yeah, they gave us the plans of Alaska Land, and we used them for our cultural facility.
Well, that actually happened after the flood, though. I thought there was.
I don't remember when that happened.
I thought there was something.
The Cultural Facility Act was a long time back.
Was it?
Oh, maybe. Yeah. And it went on for years. I was on the committee. I went down to Juneau one year for the annual meeting with the. Mm-hmm. They did appoint a guy, the Cultural Facilities Director, to get committees going all over the state to plan their cultural facilities. They funded the guy.
Mm-hmm.
But then they ended up defunding the. Mm-hmm. The cultural facilities after all this planning, all the money they'd spent on this guy or girl, woman. So it had been going on for years, 5 or 6 years before we ever got to the point where it died and before we ever got to the point where KBPI and the Cultural Facilities Committee merged and we hired Jerry, and that was over 10 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
10 years ago. So add another 4 or 5 to that, you're 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be, what, 93, 83, 79, 77, 78?
Mm-hmm.
So when was the flood?
I think that was in 67.
Oh, shoot. Well, see, that was only our second performance.
Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't that?
No, that happened before I got
67. 1967. That was the centennial year.
3 years after the.
It was a purchase centennial. That was the Alaska Purchase Centennial. We got a big grant that year. And that helped us build on our sets and buy some more lights.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. Yeah.
And that was only 3 years after the earthquake.
And was that the same year that they had their flood in Fairbanks then?
67, I believe so.
Okay.
Now, Lola's told that story, and I, you know, my dates are not necessarily that close, but it's. One other thought I'd like to have you pursue, and that is, obviously this thing didn't happen by a small group of people, but there has been support coming from just virtually every aspect of the community. Coast Guard Base, KEA,
KEA brought out a generator to begin with, remember, or did you know?
I knew about it, yeah. Okay.
The generator was set right up on the edge of the parking lot. Unfortunately, you could hear it.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounded like a waterfall,
fortunately.
And that wasn't too bad. But that was all our lights.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it went out one night. Yeah, they donated that, and they wired it for us. And they also did something that we shouldn't, that we quit doing. They put two retaining cables from the back corners of that control tower. Back and anchored it on the hillside, mm-hmm. because the damn thing could fall right on its face. It's on a very narrow base, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that was, we were sure to get that done, but I was shocked to find out that they pulled those things somehow. Mm-hmm. They're up there sitting there, and, you know, the front one hangs out over the first one, mm-hmm. too, and it hasn't fallen down yet. If we ever use it again, I think it ought to be anchored again. But anyway, they contributed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
All the contractors did. All the laborers and all the drivers, they did it for nothing, and we have a list of them somewhere. Because some of them are dead. Red Blondin was a heavy equipment operator, and he was the buildings and grounds superintendent for years, and he helped pull the contractor together, supervise the work, and did a lot, you know. And you know, his boy, Leroy, and his wife Grace, she left, she doesn't live here anymore. But he did a hell of a lot for it. A lot of people did. A lot of businessmen bought, we got little framed, I don't know if you've seen any of them, certificates, and sold them. I don't know what for, $10 a piece, $25 a piece, I don't know, to raise money. They were hanging all over town, and all the business people did buy them. So yes, we had a lot of support. The newspaper a lot, KEA a lot. The contractors and the laborers at first a lot. And then all the people who participated. And the Coast Guard, of course, probably the only reason it continued to survive the last 10 years. Because they came in and played the parts.
Well, didn't they, I mean, again, going back.
Plus, yes, they gave some explosives.
Yeah, they did. They in fact, they were demolition for quite a while.
Yeah, right. Maybe we found out about this tape. This explosive tape.
Primacord?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we could handle it. But before that, yeah.
You should send a barge, have a barge anchored out there in the
bay
and touch them off.
Rockets and things. Yeah, right, that's right. Do you know, did you hear the story about when Jim Fisk was the munitions man? This will tell you a little something about Jim's inventive genius. There are two things about Jim connected with the RAM that will help you understand some of the things he does, maybe. He was munitions, and he kept setting off the charge. Back in the swamp, we used dynamite. And he'd get very enthusiastic about that job. Of course, he was drinking a little bit each night, and a little tipsy on stage occasionally. He was Pertoff, following Lon Chase, who was the original. And he kept putting more sticks of dynamite in one charge, you know, because it kept getting more and more impressive. One night, I think he had 9 sticks of dynamite in one charge wrapped up back there in the swamp, and when it went off, we had a big bus back there, an old bus that we used for the kids' playroom, you know, when they went on stage and dressing room and stuff. And when that went off, it blew out all the windows in the bus. God, nobody got hurt. It blew out all the power backstage. And the communications was gone, so we didn't have any way of cueing people except by running around and trying to find them. We had to play the rest of the night that way, but boy, that was something. That was Jim Fisk's creative genius. Another thing he did when he went to Fairbanks to a Lions convention, and Richard Nixon flew in. He took his costume with him, his Pertoff costume with him, and his axe. And the Nixon plane arrives, and off across the tarmac runs Jim Fisk with his axe and his hunter's costume, and damn near got shot by the Secret Service man surrounding Nixon.
I hadn't heard that one.
You hadn't heard it?
No.
Well, it gives you a little idea about Jim Fisk. He'll do anything. Sometimes without too much forethought. That was funny. It did hit the newspapers. It did get us some publicity. That was his purpose.
No.
Yeah, yeah it did. The lucky thing he survived it.
Well, the first year we had a real sheep, right? A real ram?
Oh, no, we had a goat.
A goat.
With a curl.
And had him another
side?
Oh,
the first several years. It belonged to Carl Brunstead, who was a caretaker for the Craft House over on Crafts Island, which is the one that separated from Crooked Island and the narrow channel. Yeah. He loaned us that goat for several years. And I think Dick Hensel from Fish and Game would anesthetize it each night. Or somebody would. And so we just had an unconscious goat hanging upside down on this stick, you know. And he had a curl, so, you know, it looked kind of like a ram. It was a goat. You heard that story. There's one funny story and one tragic story about that. The funny story is that one night, wasn't quite completely anesthetized. And I forgot, I was playing Klebnikov, yeah. And so he came on from the forest entrance, two Indians carrying him on a stick, you know, and his tail was going, just his tail, you know. Okay, everybody saw that in the casting room and knew, you know, he wasn't quite asleep and didn't know what the hell was going to happen. And it was twitching, not all the time, but now and then twitching. And he got just about to where storyteller's going to say, Ram, strong, brave, live on high mountain, you know? And the damn thing went, and one of the Indians threw his spear in the air and fell down on his back in fits of laughter. He couldn't help it. That was the funny. These are the ones you remember.
Yeah.
But the poor goat did die, probably because of the anesthetic being used over numerous performances. I don't know. I think we used him a couple of years, maybe three. But he eventually died. That's a good result of that. This is a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
If he'd done so much for the community, he gave his life for the play. Yeah. Then there was a time the lights went out and we lighted the rest of the play with the torches.
Hmm.
Were you here then?
No.
I don't know whether that was a generator failure. When we had the generator out there, I've forgotten how many years we had the generator. Maybe 5 or 6. Maybe only 3 or 4.
Yeah.
But anyway, the power went out and it was out everywhere. So the hunters just dumped there. Things in the kerosene buckets and lit them up and went out in front and held them over where the scenes went on, and that was the light of the play. Worked right.
Yeah. Well, there's all kinds of, you don't have a production like that without, just every year,
something
all kinds
like that,
of little anecdotes that just kind of...
What would be fun would be to get everybody that's been involved in it to get together,
mm-hmm.
like you do when you're reminiscing and trying to mm-hmm. remind each other of all the things that used to happen,
mm-hmm.
which you can't remember by yourself, but
right.
you get some association and come out.
Yeah.
Like you're doing it right now.
Yeah.
With me. Reminding me of some things that I've forgotten. And so on. That would be fun. That's fun anyway.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think that's the best way to take an oral history.
Mm-hmm.
Get a number of people together that are involved, were involved in something, so they can correct each other and stimulate mm-hmm. each other's mm-hmm. memories.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get a pretty composite picture. Using one person, you get that one person's bias.
Sure, sure. Yeah, it would be fun to pursue this with, you know, with Lola and maybe. I don't know, who are some of the others? Well, Margaret Childs. It'd be fun to go down and visit her and reminisce about the Ram. And
well, there are enough people in town that were involved.
Mm-hmm.
First storyteller, Roy Manson.
Mm-hmm.
The first Deliaroff, Tom Sweeney.
Mm-hmm.
From the beginning, I think that Ron Chase was the first Pertoff. And, Arvid White is now dead. He was the first Father Joseph. Or Father Herman. And there are a lot of those people around that still will remember some things about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they could get together and talk about it. Jerry directed it 2 or 3 years. Jerry played Baranov 1 or 2 years.
Mm-hmm. I think that's when it back to school.
And suffered a hemarthrosis of the knee. That he got out on the side and he couldn't play that year.
Hmm.
It took a long time in a cylinder cast to get well.
Hmm. Yeah, we've had, I know we've had, you know, people go out there and in rehearsals get drenched and chilled and,
oh, yeah.
you know.
And the romances that began out there?
Yeah.
Of course, the one everybody remembers is Rita and Gary.
Yeah.
Rita was Anna and Gary was Captain was Shields.
Mm-hmm.
That year. mention the Halls enough. Hugh Hall,
mm-hmm.
first graduate in drama from the University of Fairbanks. He directed the film.
Mm-hmm.
For 2 or 3 years?
Punch the talk button.
Talk button. That one. Mm-hmm. What I just did. Gotta chop up one more. I'm keeping track this month.
Oh.
Hey, Doug. Not there yet? Oh, okay. Withrow. Did he fill out the form? Did he fill out the copy of the admission record? Okay. What's that? Got me. Anyway, we don't use medications for withdrawal, so I'll have to check that out. But I can do that tomorrow. What's the guy's name? Sounds familiar. You ever been in detox before? Oh, how long ago? Okay, how long is he, what's the longest period of sobriety in the last year? Can't understand him? Okay, there were two people who did that. Okay. How drunk or sober? Okay, did he, can he walk with a reasonably well? Okay. Oh, okay. Now, I still want to know, do you not have your new forms yet? Yeah. Okay, would you ask him the longest period of sobriety in the last year? Voluntary. You can't get it? Okay, well, I will find that out. That's useful. That tells me, you know, how heavy and how steady a drinker he is. Okay, go ahead and admit him. See him tomorrow. Okay, bye.
The middle one.
Okay. There's a questionnaire that I've devised. Most of these guys know pretty well, except that they just ran out of them and haven't familiar with it. The questions that I need to know to be able to evaluate whether we're going to have a problem with this guy or whether we might have a problem with him or not. Most of the people who come in there don't have problems that require hospitalization.
Mm.
Very few of them do. Don't have significant withdrawal. They do have withdrawal, but it's not such that requires medication.
Mm-hmm.
There's a supportive environment. There's the purpose of certainly allaying a lot of anxiety. There's an awful withdrawal when you stop the drug. That's one of my jobs now. I'm on contract with KCAS, director of the detoxification center, and I train the attendants how to recognize withdrawal symptoms, and they take blood pressures and pulses and temps and observe for tremor, and they're pretty good at keeping track of things and knowing when to call and talk to me about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice job. I've always liked working with people who have drug abuse or drug addiction problems, drug including alcohol, which happens to be the worst one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the only legal one.
Yeah.
I'm looking to the day when all drugs are legalized, standardized, sold over the counter, taxed so we can use the tax for treatment programs for those who become addicted. About only 1 in 10 become addicted. The rest of them, although the general public does not know this, the rest of them use drugs very carefully and very conservatively and very advisedly, and don't really have a problem. They continue to work, they continue to be responsible, they continue to be married, they continue to raise children, and nobody ever sees that. All they hear is the stuff about how horrible it is.
Mm-hmm.
And what the horror is what happened in prohibition and alcoholism that you see when you look at the untouchables. It's the narcotics team, narcotics squads fighting a battle with the drug vendors, and they fighting battles with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the more this goes on, the higher the profits are. And they're all untaxable. And more people get killed because of the drug war than ever get cured.
Mm-hmm. Now, the only
alcoholism, though, I've seen in 35 years of practice, a great change. A great change. When I started practice in 1955,